governor issues a clarion call on hate crimes. Controversial payday lending bills in the Senate, that plus ever-expanding school referenda and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 1st, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb stayed steadfast in his push for a hate crimes bill that includes a list of victim characteristics, and he urged Hoosiers to call their lawmakers to help make that happen. This session's hate crimes bill originally included a list of victim characteristics, including race, religion, and gender identity. But Senate Republicans struck it out, and House GOP leaders don't support adding it back in. Governor Holcomb says a bill without a list isn't good enough, and he wants Hoosiers to get involved.
They need to contact the legislators that vote their legislator respectfully and appeal to their hearts and minds.
Holcomb says lawmakers could pass a bill that mirrors a federal hate crimes law, which includes a victim characteristics list.
Is not vague. It's very specific. It would be asking every legislator to do nothing that's not already currently in place.
Still, the governor says it's too soon to threaten to veto a bill that doesn't have a list included. Will this be enough to make things happen on hate crimes? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Holcomb took some blame for how things went down in the Senate for that list being taken out, but does this show progress now?
No, it doesn't. It shows the complete lack of leadership. He talks all the time about wanting to take us to the next level. I mean, his idea of the next level is like a Lego step, okay? If he wants to get the hate crimes bill, and he says he does, he has supermajorities in both houses, and he has incredible public bully pulpit opportunities to advance this, okay? He can go around in districts. He can talk to people himself. He can break arms, okay? He can do that because he's the governor of the state of Indiana, and he has things to offer to legislators or to withhold from legislators if they don't go along. And he ought to stand right up there and say that that sham legislation that passed the Senate is an insult to anybody who is actually interested in hate crimes legislation, and he's going to veto it. He won't even do that. We don't have any leadership from the governor. We don't have any leadership.
Is sitting in his state house office in a press conference and saying, I want Hoosiers to call their lawmakers enough to make something happen?
Well, we wouldn't be where we are in the hate crimes law, in the process, in the dialogue, without Eric Holcomb. I mean, he could have punted on it. He clearly has seized the issue. He is spending political capital. There is division within his caucus, all the things that we all know for sure. But instead of receding, he's not doing that. He's carrying the ball and going forward. In 2004, Hoosier voters said, look, we need a different direction, one that's more focused on business, creating jobs, economic development. This is the latest manifestation of that argument. It's one we've been having with great success since Republicans took over the governor's office.
Which is why you can't get it passed.
Which is why we keep winning these elections, why Ann's party keeps getting thumped.
No,
the other
that's
thing that's important is the PR on this has been terrific. The public relations and the media relations for all the people who are involved with this. Actually, like the Indy 11 bill, the Indy 11 people's PR has been terrific. They need to keep pounding in public and keep changing. Everything I know and everything that I'm hearing is that there's overwhelming support for this in public opinion polls.
We have heard that, but we've heard that before the session, and yet
because
the Senate
still
did.
There's overwhelming support for gun control.
Right, but the Senate still did what it did. So if you're looking at the House, who has said all along that they don't like the list, or at least the House Republican caucus, I should say, if you're Eric Holcomb, what do you have to do to make this happen?
I don't know, but the answer to that one question is Hillary Clinton, as she found out, popular vote, it's where the votes are. And if you have a district where there aren't as many proponents of this legislation as I think some members have, you can't just say statewide totals are X, and therefore you should be supported, maybe a little more nuanced. But what does it take? I don't know. Keep in mind that this governor has not been one that wants to start confrontations with members of his own party or even with members of the opposing party.
Yeah,
this is not his style. That's not to say he doesn't engage. I think sometimes we find out after the fact that he's been quite active in trying to negotiate and work something out behind the scenes. So maybe that is just a tactical move,
and
it's not that you can't necessarily fault him for trying to go that approach first.
And I think we know that Eric Holcomb has been working behind the scenes since the summer to try and make something happen, but it didn't work in the first half. So what do you think we're going to see from him in the second half?
What I can tell, I think he and others were a little surprised that, you know, him getting behind it and all the public support we know and all the business support didn't carry the day. So they're going to have to try something different. And frankly, maybe it's as simple as putting pressure on House Speaker Brian Bosma to say, you know what, put it up on the board, you know. With the Democrats and at least part of the Republican caucus, that will pass, and they all know that.
Right.
But they won't put it up on the board.
And he has to stand up and say he's going to veto that joke that they passed from
the Senate. At some point, doesn't that threat have to come out?
First off, this is called the halfway point for a reason.
Sure.
So you got a long way to go.
Yeah,
secondly,
to go.
No elected official, no governor is more attuned to where the votes are and what Hoosier is thinking than Eric Holcomb. He has traveled the state more than anyone. If he pushes for it, I bet he wins.
Let's hope he does, but I'd be very surprised.
The Indiana Senate dealt with two bills on the payday lending industry this week, narrowly approving one while narrowly defeating the other.
Payday loans under Indiana law are small, anywhere from $50 to $550, and the allowable interest rates on those loans can be as high as 391%. Proposed legislation would have capped those rates at 36%, which many in the payday loan sector argue would effectively shutter the industry in Indiana. That bill died on the Senate floor by a 22-27 vote. Another bill creates a new type of small loan, between $600 and $1,500. Proponents argue it fills in a gap for Hoosiers in need of loans, but who are unable to get them through banks or traditional lenders. The allowable interest rates on those new loans would be more than 100%. That measure passed the Senate 26-23. Governor Holcomb, when asked about that bill, said he hadn't researched it much, but that it gives him, quote, heartburn.
Robert Vane, is this an issue that more than many is crying out for compromise?
Yeah, I believe so. And as someone who's been completely and totally dead broke, there's a lot of folks who go to those places as a place of last resort because they don't have anything. And to the extent that these folks are being taken advantage of, it is a shame. It's not a crime necessarily, but it's a shame. And so there's no reason not to come together on an issue that really isn't like controversial and burning fire and that there's all this huge attention to. If they can just be reasonable, I tell my clients in the PR world, the side in any argument that is seen as more reasonable wins 9 out of 10 times, and there's a real opportunity for that here.
That's not what happens in the Indiana General Assembly. The more reasonable side never wins. It's disgraceful that we have lending that they can charge 391% interest on. But the fundamental problem here is that we don't even pay our state employees enough. We have too many people in the situation where these are the lifeboat for people because they're making minimum wage only, or they're making $10 an hour. If we had a living wage being paid even to the state employees, which of course the Republicans voted down again this year,
there was a certain Democratic lawmaker who offered that amendment.
Who offers those amendments all the time, and because they're the right thing to do. It's a disgrace that we're paying our state employees with 10, 15, 20 years experience, $2,000 a month. And they're the exact people that have to rely on these. But we should stop the 391%. And the idea that you can charge a still exorbitant amount of 100% interest on these loans is a disgrace.
Listening to the floor debate as we did this week, Nikki, is part of the issue in trying to maybe find compromise here is that a lot of these lawmakers seem to be very confused about what these bills do and say.
This is a very complicated issue. You know, we do have a basic cap of 30%, 36% on most products except for payday loans. So, you know, you would hear one person say, "Where we already have the cap and we need the cap." And you know, and it's not just the interest rate either. It's fees that they can add on and all that. I mean, the interesting thing I saw is that there was sort of no middle ground. Like, both sides are so entrenched. We are either literally enslaving people or saving them from, you know,
oblivion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everyone is, it's so hyperbolic on this issue right now that, I mean, no one is compromising at all.
Does that improve as the session goes on, or do both sides dig in?
I don't think it improves. You have such, I think that the sentiments are so strong, especially on the on the part of the defenders of the industry, they would see, I think, any additional restrictions on the amount that can be charged as the first step toward abolition of the industry or...
Maybe
or the,
regulating it fairly. Oh, my God, what
well,
a terrible idea.
It is interesting how, you know, typically... who made the comment that the public is overwhelming? It's not as if they're that's 50-50. but this is one of those that really shows that there is the debate that takes place on the floor or in committee in front of the cameras or in front of witnesses and individuals who are sitting in the committee room. And then the debates that take place, or the very quiet discussions that take place.
Although I want to be fair, they really debated those bills on the Senate floor publicly and openly, and it was...
I'm guessing the conversations they had in caucus is exactly the same thing that we saw play out on the Senate floor on this one. Because it
wasn't just one author
and then all the Democrats. It was all over the place.
But there's a lot of lobbying is the point I'm making.
As we all, I'm assuming, agree in the belief of free will among adults, when you, as an organization... have part of your profit model, the desperation of fellow human beings, you're going to have a tough road to hoe.
Well, legislation to limit when schools can put public questions on the ballot died on the Senate floor this week, even as measures to create more school referenda advance.
Republican Senator Blake Dorio's bill would have limited school referendums to general election ballots, barring them from primary ballots. There have been 162 public questions for schools since 2009, and nearly 60% of them have come in primary elections. Doria argues that as many people should vote on the referenda as possible, and turnout is always lower in the primary. But he didn't have enough votes to pass his bill. Meanwhile, lawmakers will likely allow schools to create a new type of referendum, one which allows them to raise money specifically for school safety. Since school referendums were created in 2008, about 63% have passed, with the passage rate much higher in primaries than general elections.
Nikki Kelly, Dorio's bill obviously died, but is this the last we're going to see of this issue?
I think this is an interesting issue that's starting to, you know, bubble up, and lawmakers are going to have to grapple with it. The fact is that last year, $314 million in referenda property taxes were paid in Indiana. And that's the fastest growing segment there is. And that was up 26% from the year before. So at some point, they are going to have to consider whether there should be some limits or, you know, when they should have them to make sure the most voters are voting on it. That was a protection they put in on tax caps. But, you know, there right now is no stopping that growth. And now they're adding the school safety referendum on top.
Is this, though, the situation that the General Assembly has created in Indiana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess if you, yeah, on paper, that's that you can't argue that it's not. This is a system that was set up. So I don't know if that's the culpability. Of course, a lot of people who set up that system are no longer in office. But I guess the argument that the opponents of this bill make and did make is, yeah, there's a way to keep these referenda from happening, or at least to reject them, and that is go and vote against them. And if the will of, you were talking about free will and the will of the people, I think that's, there is that notion that if it were really that bad or people were that strapped, they'd figure out a way to band together and oppose these things.
At a time when we're having a teacher pay discussion at the State House and education funding, as always, every 2 years when we write the budget, is so much in the spotlight, can lawmakers with a straight face say, we're going to do everything we can for schools, but some of them saying, well, but these referenda, come on, guys, let's cut it out.
No.
Yeah.
I directed the IPS referenda in November 2018. Both questions, it was $272 million total. Both questions passed with more than 70% of the vote. High turnout election for an off election. But you cannot simultaneously argue, say, that we need to do more for teachers and then, or schools, and make them safer for obvious reasons, and then jihad against the one tool you've given schools to say, this is how we need to, this is how we raise more money. If you've got teacher retention issues and you've got teacher recruitment issues, some of that's financial. Well, that's just simple. If you're not going to get continuously higher much higher, more money from the General Assembly, you've got to use the tool that you have. IPS just came out this week, says that despite the referenda, they still may have to close schools. It's not a panacea for everything, but if these school districts are willing to take on the fight and win, they deserve it.
And yet, we clearly, it is bubbling up. I think exactly that word, Nikki, that we're starting to hear from more and more lawmakers some unease at the idea of more and more public questions on the ballot.
Well, then they need to find the money to fund the schools properly. I mean, they took that on under Mitch Daniels, and they said they were going to provide the funding for education. They haven't done it. They've done these virtual schools and wasted tens of millions of dollars, and they're putting what growth there is in the budgets above the basic minimum of inflation, plus a tiny little bit are going to the 6% that are in alternative schools.
Let me ask this. To the specifics of Doria's bill in particular, because I'm curious about that idea. Is there something, though, to saying, listen, if you're going to be asking for $200-something million on the ballot, you should ought to have it
well,
in the general
election. I have to admit that I was really encouraged to hear a Republican talk about wanting to increase voter turnout instead of using all the methods they've used over the years to decrease voter turnout. It's good to know they want Democratic participation because I didn't think that was on their agenda.
Small D Democratic.
Small D Democratic.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's for sure. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the General Assembly impose more limitations on school referendums? A yes or B no. That's our own little referendum, I suppose. Last week's question, will the General Assembly pass a meaningful hate crimes law in 2019? You're a little pessimistic out there. 18% say yes, they will. 82% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the Senate approved legislation this week that aims to improve the relationship between the Department of Child Services and the state's foster parents. The measure makes several changes to the way foster parents interact with both the Department of Child Services and the court system. Bill author Aaron Houchin says, for example, the legislation creates a new definition of long-term foster parent, someone who's cared for the child for at least 12 months.
So that we make sure that foster parents who've invested time and energy and care for these children have a say when it comes to intervening in CHINS cases and termination cases.
The measure also allows foster parents to urge courts to force DCS to try to terminate parental rights if a child has been under the agency's care for more than a year. But the bill's original language would have penalized DCS if it didn't comply with that court order, and a Senate committee stripped that language out. John Schwanis, this is the second time this session we've seen lawmakers remove or block accountability language from the DCS bills. What is the point of some of these if you don't have that in there?
I don't know. I mean, that it would seem that, especially given the controversy that erupted last year when the director of the agency resigned in protest and issued a pretty strong warning that if nothing was done, children would die. And, of course, something has been done to the tune of $286 million additional dollars a year. So why then there isn't a willingness to take the next step, which perhaps would seem obvious, to make sure that there is accountability to maintain the targets and standards that have been set up? So I don't know. I mean, I don't get the politics of that.
With the bills that are moving, and they're moving fairly easily, as long as things improve in the short term at DCS, will it matter that there's a lack of accountability in the law?
Probably not. And we're already seeing improvement. Yeah. Caseloads are down. And on top of that, they're also going to shift the targets a bit so that they're now going to meet those caseload limits. Now, on this particular issue, look, I don't get it. I don't understand why everyone in a court proceeding wouldn't have to follow a judge's order. It seems pretty basic, but they're not supportive of that.
On both the bill that came out of the House and the bill that we're talking about that came out of the Senate, some of the arguments against this accountability language is functionally you just can't make that work. Functionally, we can't force them to hire more people before we give them money to hire more people, as was in the House bill. Functionally, you can't hold an entire agency in contempt.
Well, you really can't hold an entire agency
in that sense, is there really accountability that's possible to put into the law?
Well, I think if you allow, as this legislation purports to do, if you allow the foster parents who have an interest in having had the child for a period of time to intervene and to make their case to the judge, then you've got to have some faith that the judge can make a determination on what ought to happen. And if the judge makes a recommendation that parental rights ought to be terminated, then it seems to me you've taken the step that's necessary. You don't have to hold an agency in contempt, and I don't know how you do that anyway.
From a PR standpoint, as he talks about, there's so much of a spotlight on the agency. There's so much controversy that's surrounded over the last year or so. As much as it might be functionally difficult, don't you need to give some sort of like nod to, don't worry, we are being held accountable?
You have to show that you've not put the bureaucracy ahead of the actual welfare of the children, and you have to show that you've learned from your past mistakes. I think maybe alluded to earlier, Governor Holcomb's taken this by the neck, and he's really doing a terrific job. Aaron Houchin, terrific public servant.
Former case manager, too.
And we used to have the same job 20 years ago, working for Connie Noss, and she's doing terrific, and I'm glad to see her step up. She deserves to have the spotlight on this, but I know a lot of folks who are adopted and a lot of people who have made adoptions, and the one thing they all complain about is the bureaucracy in the sense that it's that some people just don't care, and I'm glad to see that that's starting to turn considerably.
Well, measures to increase Indiana's cigarette tax and raise the minimum age to buy tobacco died as the General Assembly reached halftime, but a bill on vaping is still alive.
The House has passed overwhelmingly a $1 cigarette tax hike for a couple sessions in a row, but the Senate GOP has never had much appetite for the bill, and House Republican leaders this year weren't pushing for it either, beating back Democratic amendments on the issue. A bill to raise the age to buy tobacco from 18 to 21 cleared one Senate committee but couldn't get past one of the chamber's fiscal committees. Yet legislation to impose a new tax on e-cigarettes is on the move, clearing the House, as Senate leader Rod Bray indicated no strong opposition to the idea.
And Delaney, why are we okay with taxing e-cigarettes but not raising taxes on regular ones?
Well, you know, maybe the legislature is more concerned about nicotine than cancer. I don't. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And it shows, again, no leadership. You hear that, okay, well, if we pass it here, the other chamber won't hear it. Well, tough. They ought to pass it anyway. Indiana's record on health issues with diabetes and obesity and smoking and all the indicators that indicate we have an unhealthy population. We should be raising the cigarette tax. We should be raising it substantially and discouraging people. And we ought to look at it as a fine. Okay, you want to smoke, fine. You want to put air out there that's polluted for other people to breathe in secondhand that has risks associated with it, you're going to pay a price for that. And we ought to be making them pay a price. But we have people in the legislature with no guts. That's why. And they think, you know, you might even say that, you know, Governor Holcomb now, in all his leadership roles, is now head of policy for the RGA. And one of the large contributors to the RGA is the tobacco industry. But I'm sure there's probably no connection at all.
Is it easier to sell? Because we've seen so many stories and so much data now that vaping particularly is taking off among young people. Is that the easier sell that, listen, we need to tax that stuff to hopefully stop kids from using it in the first place?
You've got revenue streams. You've got budget issues that depend on it. So, you know, it's like parking tickets. Why are parking tickets $20 instead of $200? Because they want people to take a chance. They want, like, well, what the heck? I'll just pay the $20. It doesn't matter. So that's where it is on taxes. I've never smoked a cigarette. I've never vaped. None of it appeals to me. But at the same time, I don't know where the tax number would be or the price per pack number would be. That's the discouraging point. And once you get to that, then when the revenues decline, you got to make those up somewhere.
Well, it would be better if we at least were on a par with the states surrounding us.
I don't think Indiana needs to be like anything to the states around us. Well, we're doing pretty well.
You're right about that. We're way behind all the rest.
Rod Bray said at the halfway point press conference that he acknowledged that at some point Indiana's going to have to raise its cigarette tax. He sees it coming. Didn't say exactly when that would be. But
it's
at some
been,
point,
like, it's 7 years?
It maybe a little longer than that. But at some point, it's going to have to do it. Is part of the resistance right now because we just passed a bunch of tax hikes 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah, that's probably some of it. But keep in mind, if you lower the voting age in Indiana to 6 or 7 years old, then there probably would be a different outcome. But keep in mind, the people you're talking about for whom some argue the vaping industry was created, which is young people, they're not voting. So it's not rocket science to wonder why the person who's over 18 and smokes cigarettes has a bigger say than the kid.
Well, finally, Governor Holcomb this week admitted he smoked marijuana in college. That's after he reiterated his opposition to any sort of legalization until the federal government takes action on the drug. Robert Vane, is it a sign of the cultural shift on marijuana that this revelation was mostly met with a shrug?
It goes back to Clinton in 92 in his I Didn't Inhale. I've never smoked marijuana, mostly because I didn't need a reason to eat Doritos or Oreos. And so I don't particularly get that, but it's so beyond. It's so rotary foam, black and white television, MTV fight. Nobody pays attention anymore.
Is this just, this is progress on this issue that nobody really cares all that
much? Yeah, until we've solved the problem of marijuana nationally, it's a yawn. It's a yawn.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/iwir, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.